Hey everybody, welcome to Pockets, the podcast where Fabian and I explore the pockets of movies and life. I'm Jennifer Miller, and thanks for joining us.
Hi everybody, I'm Fabian Ojeda, and guess what our theme is?
Vampires. Now before we start on the theme, I do want to say, everyone, we are hoping that our audio issues that we've been having are solved. We only know, of course, when all is said and done, so if it's still there, bear with us. We're the little podcast that could. So anyway, hopefully there's no more issues.
Or as our friend says.
Her mother says, hopefully.
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 Love you, Bruna.
Bruna.
Susie Granziera, we love you. Okay. So, vampires. You're up first.
Wow, history of vampires. I mean, everyone wonders, you know, you think that you know vampires. It's when you're a kid, for me anyway, it was seeing, you know, movies, black and white movies, and my little black and white TV set in Hollywood, you know, in our room. We didn't have the big color TV set in the room. It was the little black and white.
Wasn't there an Abbott and Costello vampire comedy?
Of course
there was. I loved them. I used to watch those movies all the time.
I'm pretty sure you might be more my sister than my actual sister, or you're a clone of her, because that is my sister. She loves all of those same things.
I love the silliness of them.
But that was my introduction to vampires. I was terrified of them.
My introduction was Frank Langella.
Oof.
I'll tell you, there were some stirrings in my little young body. Ooh. I don't know why. Something about his Dracula was so sensual.
I think it was Christopher Lee for me. Wasn't it Christopher Lee?
Christopher Lee was the first. Frank was the 70s. Christopher Lee was...
Christopher Lee was the second. The first one was... Wasn't it Bela Lugosi? Bela Lugosi? Yeah, Bela Lugosi was the first. So, but for me, it was Christopher Lee. Oof. Man, he was scary as shit.
I love it.
All right, well, just for a little history so we figure out where did this whole theme of vampires begin. The concept of vampires or vampire-like creatures spans so many cultures with various myths and stories recorded throughout history. The first known stories and historical facts about vampires are a fascinating blend of folklore, superstition, and cultural beliefs about death and the afterlife, which makes sense because like everything else that's sort of mythical, like the Bible, it's the way that we would be able to explain life when we don't have scientific answers to things. So this sort of ties into the same thing. One of the very, very earliest is the ancient Mesopotamians. They had a reference to vampire-like creatures from the myths of ancient Mesopotamia, like the Lilitu or Lilith, which also Jewish folklore has a figure that is Lilith that is also mentioned earlier. And it's found in their folklore. And she's considered a night demon who, like her earlier counterparts, was associated with the death of infants and the seduction of men. It's really interesting how most monsters that come in, you know, the boogeyman, anything is something that's going to take your children or...
Yeah.
It's the idea of putting fear. It's the other side of, I think, of a devil. It's another way of, in the Bible, that the devil is the... It's the same thing.
Right.
It's more of an incarnation that's more...
Right.
Relatable more so.
Right.
That's what these were. The ancient Greeks had their versions also. The Lamia, who was a monstrous woman who transformed into a creature that hunted young men and drank their blood. I think those still exist in West Hollywood. Similarly, the Impusa was another creature said to seduce young men and drink their blood while they slept. There's Slavic folklore, which is where I thought the idea of Transylvania would have come from.
Right.
But Transylvania, you know, everyone says, oh, yes, he's from Transylvania, and they talk with
that. There must have been a vampire there.
This was all created by Bram Stoker and his version of Dracula. When he wrote that, it became
solidified that
all
it was
of it,
Transylvania.
And that's the place where he was born in that, but it wasn't. It was just created for that book. There was no Transylvania or any link to it before that.
Right.
The Middle Ages in Europe during the medieval period, during the outbreaks of the plague and the diseases, it also led to these vampire-like superstitions, and it made sense. Unexplained deaths and disease were sometimes attributed to the undead.
Mm-hmm.
The corpses of suspected vampires were often exhumed and rituals performed to ensure they did not return to life.
Crazy. And you wonder, like, why were they suspected? Like, really, like, in the day, not folklore, not...
Yeah.
I'm doing the Judy Garland.
Hi, Judy. You're an angry lady. But yeah, it's so crazy.
It's interesting.
Yeah, and that they wouldn't come back to life. The idea that they're going to come back and
you're going to dig it up.
You know, I don't know. I just keep thinking there was no technology. They don't even 100 years from today, we had technology that they didn't have in the 16th and 18th century, and things that, and you know, they didn't have scientific knowledge like we do now to know any better. And there's still people in the world today who would believe the dumbest bullshit. Go to Texas and you'll find them there. Go to Florida and you'll find them there that believe the dumbest bullshit.
So I have some great friends in Texas, but I agree with you. For me, it's the flat earther belief. It's just like, what are you talking about? But you see,
imagine, so in the 16th and 18th century, all of that thing, all of it was easily, possible. Right. Absolutely. Yeah, plausible. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
For sure.
I agree.
Anyway, these stories and records help shape the modern interpretation of vampires. Significantly influenced by the 18th century vampire controversy in Europe, I didn't know there was one, the publication of Dracula by Bram Stoker in 1897, that's what changed everything and solidified the characteristics and lores of vampires in popular culture.
1897 was the year my grandfather, John, or Jack Kelly, was born, FYI.
Really? Oh my God, was he from Transylvanian?
He was not from Transylvania.
That you know of.
He was from Ireland. All right, guys, next we're going to talk about bats and vampires. The concept of vampirism has ancient roots, as Fabian just discussed, myths found in cultures all around the world. These myths often involved malevolent spirits or demons that drained the life force from the living.
I know a few people like that. Oh, I really do.
Well, that's one of my favorite things is that show. I don't know if you know about What We Do in the Shadows.
What We Do in the Shadows.
The emotional vampire. Because there are a bunch of vampires living in modern day Brooklyn. It's so freaking funny. Check the show out. But the best character is the, you know, the fourth wheel, who is an emotional vampire.
Because he's so dull. That's a spinoff of a movie.
Of a movie.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. I learned that in our investigation.
Yes.
All right.
The modern vampire legend as we know it today emerged primarily from Eastern Europe folklore, particularly in regions such as Romania and Hungary. These vampires were often depicted as undead creatures that rose from their graves to drink the blood of the living. In the 19th century, the rise of Gothic literature, like the works of from John Polidori, with his title The Vampire, with a Y, and which, Bram Stoker's
It looks
Dracula.
So much scarier when you look at vampires spelled with a Y instead of an I.
You know,
it really looks
does,
scary.
Guys. It does. It has more. It's a little more formidable.
Yeah.
Bram Stoker's Dracula shaped the modern vampire archetype. Stoker's novel, in particular, popularized many aspects of vampire lore, and that are still prevalent today, such as their aversion to sunlight and the ability to transform into bats. One of the things that I loved about the show that we're going to talk about a little later. That's on Netflix called Dracula, is Van Helsing at one point showing him that it was a belief that he thought that he couldn't stand in front of the sun. It was something he was conditioned to believe. And so
and
he
yet
had
he could.
That reaction. And yet there he was standing in front of
what
the sun.
What about the mirror, the reflection in the mirror? Did they talk about that?
They didn't touch that.
Because, you know, they can't see themselves
can't
in
the see
mirror, supposedly.
In the mirror, but they can be photographed, right? Oh, yes, they did touch on that. Absolutely, they touched on that. I won't tell you why, because I want you to watch
I it. Just want you to know that the association with vampires and bats from a very, very early age was so strong that my fear of bats was...
Oh. Off the charts.
Off the charts. And I want you to know one day, how many queens were at? Were we? Six queens decided to go to Big Sur for the weekend and get a cabin. We go into the cabin. I had to sneak in my dog because you couldn't have pets. And I had her in a duffel bag and I had to sneak her in. We get into the cabin. We're going to play cards. We sit down and a fucking bat was in the room. And you've never heard?
No.
You've never heard? Louder, higher pitched screams in your life. We were.
How did you get it out?
One guy, the oldest one, one queen who grew up on a farm.
Okay, well, that's.
He knows about all of that. He was able to trap it with a towel. I don't know what he did and got it out. We were useless.
Oh,
I mean,
my God,
mortified, terrified. It was hilarious. We might have stained our chairs. We were
my
so
father is not from a farm. He's from the Bronx. So when a bat had
so he pulled out a shotgun.
When a bat had the audacity, he was also a giant of a man. And Harvey's drinking some water. Sorry, guys. A bat got in the house, and I said, he came into the kitchen. It was on the kitchen cabinet. And I said, what did you do? He's like, well, I took it and I just squeezed it to death. And he had to go and get rabies shots because
it bit him while he was doing it. Oh, my God.
He walked up and had, I think, abject fear, by the way. He just squished it to death with his giant hands.
Jesus.
Is that nuts?
Oh, my God. That's like, great, though. I love it.
He was pretty badass.
Yeah, he would have been my kind of guy.
With his handlebar mustache.
Yeah, I would so have a crush on your dad.
Oh, you would have. He was like dark black Irish, as they call it. So the blue eyes, the black hair.
I'm in.
All right. The portrayal of vampires in film, beginning with silent movies like Nosferatu.
Have you ever seen that? Have you ever seen clips of it?
Long ago.
It is terrifying.
Yeah,
you know, and imagine at that time in 1922.
Didn't Willem Dafoe portray him?
This is a really interesting. That comes on a little bit later. We'll be talking about movies.
Okay, right.
Because they did a fictionalized version of the actor in the movie Nosferatu. There's a movie that is, it's a fictionalized version of what that was really like. And in this movie, it's a Jim Jarmusch movie, I believe. They made it so that, no, it's not Jim Jarmusch. It's a different movie. They made it so that he was actually a vampire. Playing a vampire, pretending to be a vampire, and people didn't really know it. It's like, it's made real. It's amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
Wow. All right, Nosferatu.
1922, imagine going to a movie in 1922 where film is so new and seeing something like that on the big screen.
Pre-code still, yeah.
It would be fucking horrifying, you know?
Terrifying. Terrifying. To see that image.
Yeah.
You know, because it's one thing when you read a book, you can, but to have the image provided for you, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And nothing else before it. You've never seen anything like it. Like now, that is a cartoon for us because we've seen
the
incredibly,
Exorcist.
Incredibly scary movies.
Right.
So,
well, that movie further solidified Dracula's place in popular culture.
Yeah.
Over time, vampires have been portrayed as both terrifying monsters and romantic figures, Frank Langella. Evolving to reflecting changing societal norms and interests. So basically, the bat-vampire connection comes down to transformational myth. One of the enduring connections between bats and vampires is the idea of transformation. In many vampire legends, vampires are said to have the ability to makeshift into bats.
Yeah, they can shapeshift, and sometimes into wolves. That's
yes.
Not just bats, wolves, crows. Anything that is associated with
the dark.
Yeah.
What we do in the shadows. Bat!
Yeah.
And he screams and he turns into the bat. You gotta watch that show, everybody. Anyway, guys, it emphasizes the creature's nocturnal nature and association with darkness, as Fabian just said. The scientific parallels, while folklore often portrays bats as sinister creatures, in reality they are harmless to humans, that poor bat with my dad, and play a vital role in ecosystems. Similarly, while vampires are fictional beings associated with horror, they have captivated human imagination for centuries. Sometimes we go in the hot tub at night and the pool light is on, and bats will dip and eat the bugs that are off. So we have bats here in our neighborhood.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my story, love.
This is just reminding me about something that is not part of what we were talking about. One of the very, very best comic book series I've ever read is called American Vampire, and how it's not been made into a miniseries yet is a mystery to me. It is so, so, so good. So anybody who's interested, who loves comics, you can get them in, there's probably a series of 12 now in their books.
And it's about an American vampire?
American Vampire, but it starts, the very first story is a young actress who moves to Hollywood at the beginning of film, it's still silent movies, and she is invited to a party, and they invite all these extras because they use them as bodies for these vampires, and she is left out in the desert to die, and one vampire bites her to save her, gives her his blood to save her, and it's this, the whole story is like a century of these two people.
Wow.
It is really good.
Oh,
it is, and it gives you a whole history of all vampires. Some are you know how it's wood, like
the
you
wooden
have to,
stake.
A wooden stake.
Right.
Others are gold. Others are, they're different elements for different regions of where they came from, and some are really, really ancient. Some are prehistoric. Some are Native American. It is fascinating, and it delves into all of these cultures.
Is that true historically? Like, well, you just went over that earlier. Like, each, it seems that each culture has
this
belief.
And what's great about this book, this comic book, is that she is the very beginning. She and
are they lovers? Do they love each other?
No. No, not at all. She has a boyfriend. She starts getting, she never ages, and he starts to age, but they are the loves of their lives. It's a beautiful love story. I wish I could remember all of the details. I know that Albuquerque is the artist, is his last name. He's Brazilian, and his art is stunning.
Oh.
All of it is stunning. Oh. I can't remember anything because I'm having gin.
But American?
American Vampire. And it is so good. And why has it not been made into, it needs to be a series.
A cool animated
series.
Yeah.
Even not animated.
Oh, yeah,
it would
Preacher.
It would be incredible live action. It would be so good and so beautiful. And it ends in the 60s. It ends, I believe it ends, it might end in the early 70s. Like, they go to space in the moon when they go to the...
Oh, my God.
It is really, really, really amazing. And it involves Richard Nixon. It involves John F. Kennedy. It involves history, American history, through the whole thing.
Right.
Through the whole thing. It's really
well done.
Was
it written during that time?
No, it's new. It's like it's only about 15 years old, maybe.
Oh, so cool.
It's really, really well done.
All right.
It's really good. Highly, highly, highly recommend.
Excellent.
All right. We're going to learn a little bit, though, about the blood drinking, because that's such a big thing. And, you know, that immediately makes me think of True Blood, which, the whole idea of having canned blood. That really pushed things to a whole other level.
That show was just off the charts.
It was
really
great. Sure, it was great. Everybody, Suki, everybody was so good in that.
I agree.
Yeah. The history of people who drink blood and its correlation to the vampire myth is a complex and multifaceted topic. Don't the Kardashians drink blood or something? No, I'm serious. I think they do.
Isn't it not healthy for a human to be drinking blood?
It can't
really
be. It couldn't be.
I don't think it is.
However, there are some connections and influences worth exploring, like folklore and mythology. Again, throughout history, tales of creatures that consume blood have been present in various cultures worldwide. There really are a lot. These myths, the chupacabra, weren't that in the Spanish, the Mexican,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they the idea is that they drink the blood of goats, your herd, and humans. They involve malevolent spirits, demons, monsters that feed on the life force of humans or animals. Again, I think there are a lot of those in West Hollywood. I don't know why am I saying that, but I've experienced them. The vampire, as it's commonly known in Western culture, primarily emerged from Eastern European folklore. Particularly in regions of Romania and Hungary, like we said before, these vampires were undead beings that rose from the graves to drink of the living. It's kind of repeating the same thing that we were saying before, but the idea of the drinking, this is an interesting part, the psychological and subcultural part, because there are, how many times do we see this in shows and people who are like, oh yeah, I'm a vampire, or like, I drink blood, or...
Well, that's what I wanted you to just mention, number two, under psychological subculture.
Yeah, some individuals identify as sanguinarians and claim to have a physiological or psychological need to consume blood.
So they're really...
Sanguinarians are blood-sucking vampires. They feel like they need the blood of others to feel healthy and strong. But most sanguinarians are not the blood-sucking monsters that you may think of when you think of a vampire. The reason is, I mean, this is for me, full-on schizophrenic, and this is someone who is a sociopath.
Like, yeah,
you know,
I have to agree.
Feels that they're getting some sort of power.
Mm-hmm.
Through somebody.
Which was also shown in True Blood. Didn't they believe that one of the characters believed when they were drinking the blood that they were getting stronger?
I think they were, but that was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, one of the greatest television shows of all time, truly, of any genre. Of any genre. It was really, really ahead of its time. It was an amazing, amazing show.
Love that show, which we will discuss in detail a little bit further.
For scientific purposes, this consumption of blood has historical and cultural significance in rituals and medical practices, and it is not a common or socially acceptable behavior in most cultures today, I think. Also, drinking blood outside of controlled medical settings poses significant health risks, including the transmission of diseases such as hepatitis and HIV.
Foolish. I really do.
Yeah. It really is mostly a folklore. It's there. I don't think there's too much of reality to people drinking blood other than people who are kind of sociopathic.
Right.
And feel that they're getting some sort of power from it.
I agree. But I agree.
They're using rituals too. There's the idea of rituals, vampiric rituals, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And in some vampire subcultures, initiation rituals mark the induction of new members into the community. These rituals may involve symbolic acts, oaths, or ceremonies designed to establish a sense of belonging and commitment to the group. And I know Fabian and I seem like we're really kind of sticking to our outline here, but we have a lot of ground to cover. So
you know what I'm finding interesting about this is that I think that a lot of the same rituals that they're talking about here, right? So it's to start initiations, mm-hmm. Feeding rituals. I don't think that they stray very much from the way people view Satanism and the rituals of Satanists and the things that are required.
That's a really good point.
Because they require killing someone, yes. And they require the blood of someone. So I have a feeling that there may be it's an offshoot of that kind of thing.
And the voodoo culture is kind of similar to that.
Exactly,
well.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. So there is a lot of, I think that all of this is the same thing to bring fear and control of people.
Yeah,
you know, like
no, I agree.
The Bible does with talking about Satanists. In fact, something came out today and some pastor here in the United States talking about Satanism just talked about it.
What did he say?
I can't remember exactly. It was some...
But like truly believing that... Well, I mean, I guess there are Satanists out there, but when you don't believe
A pastor vows to fight Satan's influence at the local library. This is today.
Oh,
apocalyptic warnings of an evil assault are fueling struggle for control of the public library in Metropolis, Illinois. Like, this is still going on. This is why I'm saying there are people who will believe anything.
Truly.
Anything. Because it feeds the folklore that they already believe to be true.
But you know what I have a hard time with, Fabe? I can understand people in this, 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th centuries because they didn't have the information that we have on our fingertips today.
To know
today.
That the earth is not flat.
But like we hold computers in our pockets.
Yeah.
And there's so much information out there. How can they still believe in this kind
I think
of
their favorite term is fake news. They love all of that. They love saying that to anything that doesn't, if it doesn't
fit
into their
narrative,
world, into their narrative, it's fake news. Oh, it can't be real. It's fake news. It's fake news.
And anyone that believes in it, it's otherwise. Or uninformed.
Or we're satanic.
Yeah, there are the few out there that I think, that I know, even in my family, that are willing to debate about it and not just think that the person's stupid.
Yeah.
And that's my family members in Dallas, not Jersey, because Jersey thinks that, if you don't believe, you're misinformed, and it's kind of frustrating. The sadness is that wasn't the case 10 years ago. Just wasn't the case,
Right.
Have different...
So what's the difference? What happened in the last 10 years, right?
I know.
Yeah. And it may happen again.
That is, I know.
To get it, make it worse.
We're going to go to Ireland. I got my Irish citizenship. We're out of here. Anyway, guys, where was I? Feeding... Okay, so some individuals within the vampire subculture engage in blood-sharing rituals.
I wonder how that goes with the blood brother thing. When you make a blood swear and you cut your finger and you...
I did that.
And do the thing.
I
wonder
little.
If there's a weird...
Again, just contaminating ourselves with potential diseases.
Yeah, or strengthening ourselves,
That's
right?
true.
At that age...
These rituals may be seen as a form of bonding, intimacy, or spiritual communion. And I think that's really where it stems from. In fictional portrayals of vampires, feeding rituals involve the act of consuming blood from living beings, while real-life vampires do not possess supernatural abilities. Some individuals within the vampire subculture may engage in role play. So I guess when they say real-life vampires, they're talking about the sanguine, the ones that are drinking the blood. Okay.
I don't think obviously it's not a real vampire.
Yeah, I think real
this
in quotes
just,
needs to be
That's like me saying I am really a samurai
yes.
and walking around with a samurai sword and I think
Shogun.
I think I'm Uma Thurman in Kill Bill because I do think I am Uma Thurman in Kill Bill all the time. In my mind,
oh, I love
in my
that.
Mind,
that's
I am a samurai warrior like nobody's business. I'm really great at it.
That. That's your superhero self.
Yeah, and I think that that's what they think, that just because they do whatever that is, then that makes them...
Right, powerful in some way.
Yeah.
Ceremonial rituals play a significant role in some vampire subcultures, drawing inspiration from occultism, paganism, which is... It's sad because the paganism that I'm familiar with is one of nature and natural and no harm, no foul, and, you know, but then there's darkness to any, you know, belief, I guess, system. Vampire rituals may also be influenced by Gothic subculture, with participants adopting dark aesthetics, music, fashion, and literature associated with vampires. You know, it's funny, I went to Salem because I love Salem, Massachusetts. A few years back, I used to go with my sister frequently.
Did you go because of Bewitched? That episode in Bewitched where she time travels and goes into the past? No? You didn't go for that? Because that's the only reason I would go.
Well, my sister and I were kind of... my sister is a witch. I dabbled, and she just always loved it. So I remember going with her, and it's very different today than, say, 20 years ago. It's become much more commercialized and stuff. But there was the one store that you walked in, and it was very Gothic and very... And then you'd walk into another store, and it was herbs and, you know, little cauldrons. Right. And so I find if in true paganism, like I said a few seconds ago, it's just a belief system where, you know, no harm, no foul, and you believe in nature and in earth and...
The golden rule is the main rule, I think, right?
Yeah.
Do no harm to others, and, you know, treat others the way you want to be treated. And
I read a quote today that was really great. It was, witches weren't killed in Salem, it was women.
Right. It's true.
You know?
Yeah.
Additionally, some individuals may incorporate the elements of spirituality, mysticism, and alternative belief systems into their rituals.
Which is what I think you do.
Yeah.
I think that was you.
Yes, that is correct. It's important to note that vampire rituals are diverse and can vary greatly depending on individual preferences, cultural background, and personal beliefs. Participants in vampire subcultures should exercise caution, obtain informed consent, and prioritize safety and ethical conduct in their rituals and interactions.
I don't care to give them any advice. I think, whatever. You know what I mean? I'm not giving them...
Well, that's a good point.
It is, you know, right? Like, whatever, all right. I don't know. Like we said before, though, the idea of Dracula and it's so fascinating. It did originate mostly from Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Right.
There is one historical being before him that is associated with Dracula, and it was Vlad III, also known as Vlad the Impaler.
Oh, I've heard of him.
Yeah. He was the ruler of Wallachia, a region in present-day Romania in the 15th century. He was known for his brutal methods of punishing enemies and impalement. Vlad the Impaler, which earned him the nickname Vlad the Impaler, of course. In Stoker's novel, though, Count Dracula is depicted as a centuries-old vampire from Transylvania, who possesses supernatural powers and preys upon the living. He's portrayed as an aristocratic and charismatic figure with a sinister and seductive allure. My favorite part about that whole story was how he would talk in your head. You'd be, the beautiful Mina would be in bed and she would hear his voice. Mina, come to the window.
Yes.
Mina,
yes.
Let me in. Like, that was what terrified me, is that someone could control you so easily this way that they're already inside your mind.
Head.
That's the worst.
But I do love the whole fact that they can't enter unless...
They're invited.
I think that's awesome.
It's a genius little thing, and I wonder where that one really started.
Right. Probably Bram.
Yeah. Anyway, the cultural impact of, obviously, we can look at... Just in the last 12 months, there's probably been 3 movies that are vampire-related that have been released, or TV shows that have been released. So it's obvious it is a huge, huge impact that particularly... Bram Stoker's book had, for sure.
I agree.
The historical influence, again, just goes back to Vlad and to tourism. It's done an amazing job for tourism for people who go to Romania and Transylvania, for that matter. Isn't that crazy?
Well, and I wonder if Transylvania is a little bit like Salem, right? I'm
sure
they're pandering to
it. Are you kidding?
I know, exactly. Well, now the fun time. We've given you some historical and background stuff, you know, surrounding vampires and everything. But let's discuss some movies.
Well, the very first movie was in 1922, as we mentioned, which was Nosferatu, right? And this is,
and
that one was terrifying.
Murnau, right? That was, I mean, it's, I think it's scary. I think it holds up to be scary.
It's an authorized adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula. It tells the story of Count Orlok, a vampire who terrorizes a small town. But now, to go back to what we were talking about with what's his name?
Willem Dafoe.
Oh yeah. My God, he keeps coming up, doesn't he? Didn't we talk about him?
Yes, we sure did.
Oh, we did.
Remember?
We talked about his member. Well, anyway, in 2000, he did a movie called Shadow of the Vampire, and it's a metafictional film that gives you the possibility that Max Schreck, who is the actor who played Count Orlok in Nosferatu, actually a real vampire.
Yeah,
and it's great.
Well, and also,
it was a beautiful
for
movie.
For being such an early movie, what a scary makeup situation they had on that actor.
Yeah.
Now, there was one Dracula, this is the Bela Lugosi one, in 1931.
Yeah.
That was from the Bram Stoker.
Yeah.
Interview with a Vampire. That was 1994.
In 94. But Neil Jordan, what a great freaking actor. Neil Jordan.
Well, he's the director?
Yeah.
Neil Jordan,
director. I love his movies so much. So it was really a weird idea for him to do it. But at the time, it was pretty amazing.
It was amazing. I do feel bad for Kirsten Dunst because she has mentioned it was a little awkward for her.
It had to be. Traumatizing.
And so, probably not traumatizing for her, hopefully awkward for Brad Pitt, that kiss that they shared in that movie. But that's a book I want to read as well. I haven't read that book, but I imagine that's amazing.
Yeah.
No, you think it's just better visually?
I don't know. I just think it's, the young adult book it's for masturbation, really. It's like the hot and bothered and
yes.
the sexy vampire,
yes,
and they're
that's true.
And they're making out, and it's like that's what
that's one of the examples of like the more sensual.
But what a cast, do you remember?
I think everybody was in that movie, and don't forget Antonio Banderas.
and what's his name, not Jack Nicholson, mini Jack Nicholson, younger mini Jack Nicholson.
I don't know.
Come on.
Oh, give me something
he's been in so many things. He's
a younger mini Jack Nicholson.
He was in with Winona Ryder, the Heathers, the main guy. Christian Slater.
Oh, Christian Slater.
Christian Slater's
yes,
the guy who's interviewing
younger,
everybody.
Yes.
It was a great cast.
Yes, he was. Okay.
Blade. Were you into that?
I wasn't into that.
Yeah. I saw it. I wasn't that into it either.
I'm not an action movie person, and that had a lot of action.
Neither is my husband. Absolutely.
Yeah. Dave doesn't like action. Me neither.
Twilight. You know why I saw Twilight? I was in Mexico designing some jewelry.
Of course you were.
And I went to the movies with one of the girls that worked designing the jewelry, and we went to see this with her sister to see it. And I just remember being in the theater thinking, what am I doing here? Glowing skin and the.
I was at a wedding in Aspen for one of our close friends, and I was reading the first book. And as a book, it was just candy. It was just, and that's 50 Shades of Grey that came out a couple of years later.
Ugh.
That was Twilight with the sex that you desperately longed for in.
Of course.
Twilight.
Well, because they couldn't have it.
Because it was young adult, and she was a Mormon in real life, the author.
But Twilight is. Really just sort of a ripoff on the same themes as Buffy the Vampire Slayer. They just decided to make it into a novel, but it's kind of the same idea.
Is
Buffy couldn't have sex. Buffy couldn't have sex with
I
Angel, remember? The love of her life. She loved Angel. She couldn't
have
sex with him.
Why couldn't she
have
sex with
him? I think if he had sex, he would become mortal.
That's right. It was. Yes.
So there was always that whole that you can't have sex.
In the end, did they have sex ever? So it was just
She ended up with Spike. Remember?
Oh, no, I don't remember.
She ends up with Spike. Spike turns out to be the love. I believe. And then the world ends.
Such
and it
good
was a
good show.
Yeah. There's also a comic book. I just want you to know. After the show was over, it continued as a graphic novel written still by Joss Whedon.
Right.
And it's called, Buffy the Vampire season 12 or whatever season it was. And it continues the story. But a really fascinating thing is Joss Whedon also wrote a future version of the Vampire Slayer, and it's called Frey. Malaka Frey is her name.
Mm.
And it's like 20 years in the future. Who would be the Vampire Slayer? And it's this post-apocalyptic world, sort of. The world is, everything is more extreme. the rich are richer, the poor are poorer, like you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
But what was interesting is, you know, the Slayer is always a woman. The Slayer is always going to be a girl. In this one, she's a twin with a boy. And so she gets the powers, the physical powers, but he gets the, remember she was able to have visions and see? He gets
That's what he gets.
He turns evil.
Oh, jeez.
And it's a really fascinating.
Is that a comic?
It's a comic. Wow, it's a graphic novel, and it's really well done. And there's a moment where Willow manages to do the time travel thing for Buffy, and they meet. So they have to fight together, Buffy and Frey. And it's really, really amazing. It's really well done. And the humor, as always, with Joss Whedon is so good.
You have such knowledge on this stuff. It's so impressive.
Bullshit, yeah.
No, not really. Not at all. All right, yeah. So that we spoke about Twilight
now
again.
Now, wait a minute. Only Lovers Left Alive. Didn't you just watch this? Only Lovers Left Alive recently?
If any of you have not seen Only Lovers Left Alive, I need you to stop what you're doing, and I need you to watch it. It's Tilda Swinton and Tom Hiddleston,
and
before the
Jim
Night Manager.
Jarmusch directed. I mean, Jim fucking Jarmusch, you guys. That's the best that you can get.
Guys, the movie follows the lives of two ancient vampires who have been in love for centuries. And the film explores themes of immortality, art, and the human condition. What I love about Only Lovers Left Alive is that unlike all of the movies and shows that we're going to be discussing today, this one in particular, all they do is talk about their love for each other. There is no they drink blood that's already, you know, from a science lab. They're not trying to kill anybody.
Don't they? In fact, aren't they living in two separate cities? Aren't they living in two separate cities? And then
goes to him because she can tell that he's not
something is wrong.
He's not doing well.
Yeah.
And
is he suicidal?
He's just down, and she knows it. I think it's got to go a certain. We have these little.
We're having little issues with my.
We have such a non-professional.
Because I'm such
setup.
A lisper. We have this screen in front of my.
Here, let me. Just you got to press it down there. We're trying to just adjust the little microphone cover that
you
we
know
got.
What? It's not properly
and if it's
weighted.
Not, and if it's,
I'm going to fix this because
yes.
You know what? I am who
All right,
I am.
There,
I, am who
it.
I am.
But guys, the Only Lovers Left Alive is different because it's their love story. It's about surviving, getting clean blood, and that's it. It's not a horror. It's a true love story. Tilda Swinton, it's one of my favorite movies.
And a great ending.
Peter and I just watched it earlier in the week, and I think of all the movies here, this would be my number one choice. Only Lovers Left Alive.
I want to point out that you are very fortunate that you're married to someone who enjoys the same types of movies that you like.
We have separations in some movies.
Okay, well, I wanted to watch a movie I had never seen. A vampire movie written by my very favorite director, Quentin Tarantino, From Dusk Till Dawn.
You know, I've never seen it either.
Well,
why
I think
did
you really,
we not see it?
Harvey Keitel, for God's sakes, that's the reason. Harvey Keitel. George Clooney was so charming in it.
He had the Caesar cut hair.
Oh, it was perfect.
I love George Clooney.
Quentin Tarantino is an actor in this. It's directed by Robert Rodriguez.
Oh.
And he's an actor and he wrote it. And he's horrible.
What's the premise? Just if you could really encapsulate
two brothers.
It.
These two brothers. It's always two brothers, if you think about it. Pulp
right.
Fiction.
Yeah.
There's, well.
Well, not brothers, but
they
two
are
guys,
brothers.
Two
no,
guys.
Because, well, but did you know that the one.
Remember Two Guys, the store? Okay.
The one guy, John Travolta's character, is the brother of the first of Reservoir Dogs, of Michael Madsen's.
That's a really violent movie. I struggled with that
But
movie.
I'm just telling you, they are brothers in so many of his movies. Sometimes they're just not in the same film. But you know what's really interesting?
That is fascinating. Wait, you're telling me that the character that John Travolta played
is the brother of Michael Madsen in Reservoir Dogs.
That's insane. How do you know that?
Because I read everything there is to read about
That
Quentin
is
Tarantino.
Fascinating.
There's a lot of connections. That universe is all one universe. They're all connected. The cigarettes they smoke, every movie has the same cigarettes.
Cigarettes.
The red apple, I think
I quit
it's green apple,
seven
red apple
ago.
Cigarettes. They even have a big you know, billboard for those cigarettes. Even in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it all goes back to that universe is one universe.
That.
Oh, it's great.
That's so awesome.
But this movie is about two brothers who rob banks. They robbed a bank. They kidnapped a teller. and they're on the run.
Okay.
And they end up hijacking a family, a man who's recently widowed, who's a pastor. He's a retired pastor because after his wife died of cancer, he lost the faith. And he has his daughter, fucking Juliette Lewis, who is
good in this.
I don't even know who played the son. Played her brother.
I love Juliette Lewis so much.
This was her, this is the same character kind of that she played
Is Brad Pitt in that movie? No, okay. No,
but it's kind of the same role she played in Cape Fear, where she's this just young girl who is incredibly
naive,
but incredibly sexy without even trying, yeah. And not really understanding why. She's super young. She's a teenager. She's supposed to be 16, I think, in this.
Yeah.
And they hijack their thing, and they're trying to get to the border. They're trying to get to Mexico, and they finally get through the border. They're horrible. They kill people willy-nilly. It's a long story. Watch it, but Quentin Tarantino's a sociopath in this, and he kills willy-nilly.
Which, you know.
But once they get to Mexico, they go to this bar, this giant, beautiful bar.
So two vampires walk into a bar. No,
it turns out that here they think that they're the ones in control. They've got the guns. They're controlling everybody. And it turns out the bar is inhabited by vampires.
Oh.
And Salma Hayek is one of the major. And she is so
that woman
beautiful in this
so
movie.
Beautiful.
She is absolutely
perfection.
The most gorgeous thing. The way she dances. Her outfit.
Remember her in that movie with Antonio?
Yes.
She was beautiful.
She's gorgeous. She has the most beautiful face.
She really does.
She's gorgeous.
Good boobies too.
Yeah. Anyway, this movie has, but for two thirds of the movie, you have no idea there's any vampire connection. So Dave is watching the movie with me. All fine. The moment.
Oh, that's right. You began to say.
The moment the fangs are shown by any character, I swear to God, he literally stood up and walked out. And left. And I'm like, wait, what? He goes, no thanks. And he just left.
Does he have a fear of vampires?
He has no fear. He has zero interest in monsters, vampires.
And yet, you're his
robots.
Love. Okay.
Action, women who kick ass.
Really?
All of my favorite things. Yes. Superheroes. If there's a cape, he is gone. Capes, masks, if it's a Batman, Superman, he's out. 100%.
Oh, no, honey. Yeah.
What's nice is that I can watch, you know, I can watch.
What do you watch?
I can watch, we can watch,
Bewitched,
you know, comedies, and we can watch sad movies are really great. Yes, we can watch movies where there's no superheroes.
And Judy Garland, he was with us at the Judy Garland movie. Did he not like it?
Yeah, he'll see that. He likes any kind of biographies. He loves biographies. Yeah. Musical biographies are his favorite.
But I'm sorry, the fact that he sees the cape.
The moment. I had to, literally, he walked away and I had to pause it. I'm like, well, he's like, oh, no thanks. I don't like these movies. He always
How
tells me the same
thing.
How far
did he stay with it before the
two-thirds of the whole movie.
Oh my God.
It was only a third left. All of the action happens in the last third of the movie. Maybe even fourth of the
and
movie.
And then obviously the vampire stuff happens.
It's
in
very,
the
very quick. It's all very fast. And it's really there's a lot of guest stars that you just.
I need to watch it.
It's a fun movie.
I think Peter would like it.
He would like it. It's fun. It's totally fun.
Oh my God.
Have tequila while you're watching it. You'll love it.
We were talking earlier about the sitcom, or would you call it a sitcom, What We Do in the Shadows?
Yeah.
Well, there was that stems from the original movie in 2014, directed by, I can't pronounce the name because I'm an idiot, Number 8.
I don't even see it.
Number 8.
It's directed. Oh, what? He directed it?
Yeah, he's that really funny
Taika
guy.
Taika
Waititi.
Who
you,
is,
babe.
You know, he's from New Zealand and he did the pirate show that I'm telling everyone in the world to watch. It is the most
beautiful. Love that
we might
show.
Have. Did we talk about pirates already?
We didn't. We did, yes.
Have we talked about pirates?
Yes, I think we mentioned it on one of our early
shows. Because
the idea,
you know, the idea that why there were so many pirates is there was this weird. Did you know this?
What?
That pirates, at the time that they happened, every, I don't know, 50 years, there's this weird cycle that happens where the ocean is very calm. There's fewer storms all over the world. The ocean is calm, and it allowed for all these ships to be able to sail further and further away, not get sunk, not be stuck in storms. And that's why there was such a prevalence of pirates in that time period.
That's fascinating. Isn't it and that incredible? Would be the late 1800s, if I'm not mistaken, mid to late 1800s.
I don't know. I think it.
I feel like I used to read a lot of historical romance novels, and they were set
for masturbating, if you ask me. But yes. Anyway, that's a whole other thing we could talk about. He's an amazing actor and an amazing director.
He is amazing. And he just married that beautiful woman.
A while ago, yeah. They have kids. Yeah. And, you know, he directed the movie with Scarlett Johansson where he plays Hitler. Remember? He plays Hitler and Scarlett Johansson and the little boy. And for whatever reason, I cannot remember the name. And it was such a beautiful movie. He's so emotional. He gets to the nitty gritty. That's what I love about him as an actor, as a writer, and as a director.
Right. He seems like he's a really smart guy. Like I really get.
Oh yeah. He's super smart. He doesn't have hangups about sexuality.
Jojo Rabbit is what you're thinking of.
Amazing movie. I love that movie. Oh, what a great movie.
I know I watched it, but I need to watch it again. He actually directed the first movie of What We Do in the Shadows.
I have not seen that movie, and I'm going to see it tonight.
Which is, again, a mockumentary.
Alone, without my husband, obviously. Yes,
while drinking tequila.
Yeah.
This mockumentary comedy follows a group of vampires living in modern-day Wellington, New Zealand, as opposed to modern-day Brooklyn for the show. All right, moving along, because we've already discussed Bram Stoker, his Dracula.
Well, I think that going back to what you were saying about the lovers.
Oh, that one was good, though, with Francis Ford Coppola. Yeah.
The one about the lovers.
Yeah,
and
only
how
lovers left alive. Right.
A thing that kind of strikes a little chord is The Hunger from 1983.
Oh, yeah, that's not.
With Susan Sarandon and Catherine Deneuve.
Absolutely.
And David Bowie.
Yeah.
And it's a love triangle. And it's sort of the same idea. Catherine Deneuve and David Bowie have been lovers for a century at least.
Could you imagine, Fabe?
They were both
so weary of it, though.
They were
too.
So beautiful in it, both of them.
Catherine Deneuve, I think, can go down in history as one of the most beautiful women.
Absolutely.
Her and Selma.
And Susan Sarandon plays, I think she's a hematologist or something, and for whatever reason they need her because David Bowie's character starts to age.
Oh.
There's something wrong, and he starts to go to her to see her to figure out what is wrong.
Okay.
And she then meets Catherine Deneuve, and the triangle isn't with David Bowie. It's Susan Sarandon and Catherine Deneuve.
And Susan Sarandon is a very sexy
woman. And in 1983, Susan Sarandon was hotter than shit.
Do you remember that movie?
Oh my God.
What's that movie?
Atlantic City.
Oh.
Atlantic City. Remember?
Burt Lancaster.
Oh my God.
Guys, Atlantic City.
Burt Lancaster.
The best movie
struck
ever.
Every daddy issue I have in that movie.
Guy.
The scene
with her. I love Burt Lancaster.
Cutting the lemons and washing her skin because she'd been working with fish all day.
Yeah.
And trying to get the fish smell. That movie.
Oh gosh,
Burt
baby.
Lancaster.
I love
was
that
so
movie.
Good
gosh,
in
I
that.
Have not thought about that in years.
It's a great movie. I thought that's what you were going to bring up because Susan Sarandon just was.
Well, no, just
stunning.
Because of her sexiness. It's the one. It's the Shakespearean one, the redo of the. She's
hallucinating.
Hold
now.
On, Fabe. Talk for a minute while I do the research. We need an intern for this show.
The Hunger really, really is just a beautiful movie, and it's directed by either Ridley Scott or Tony Scott. I want to say Ridley Scott. And the moment where you find that lesbian scene is so cliche and so beautiful. You have...
Is it like full on?
There's wind. There's a little wind coming through the windows and the curtains are light and they're white and they're blowing in. And she spills the wine on her blouse and she has to take it off and she helps her take off the blouse. They're going to wash it. And that just leads, of course, to the bed. And... In 1983, I only did school twice my entire life.
Tempest, I'm interrupting you. That was the one. Did you see Tempest
no.
with her? Okay, never mind. John Cassavetes, Jenna Rowland.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I have got to see it. You had me at Jenna Rowland.
I know. I'll send you the link. Go on with your story.
Anyway, I ditched school to go see this movie with my friend Lucinda Carnell.
Okay.
And... I remember feeling totally titillated, and I was as gay as could be at
that
time.
I love that word, titillated.
But I really was. It was so beautifully filmed. Anyway, it's a beautiful movie. It's a great vampire movie because it's not the... And the opening scene with Bauhaus singing Bela Lugosi's Dead, they're at a nightclub. Catherine Deneuve, and David Bowie go to a gothic nightclub, which
yeah, because I remember it was like
ties
smoky
into the
in
whole
the
thing that we've been talking about. And there's a young couple that are dancing and they're really hot. And so they seduce them and bring them back to their apartment so that they can feed. And that's what they do. They feed on these young people.
Wow.
And David Bowie's getting too old to do this. And this is where they introduce Susan Sarandon. I love that movie.
It is a gorgeous movie. I need to revisit that.
It's a good one. What about going into TV shows? You know, we did mention
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and True Blood.
I
do need to mention Dracula Dead and Loving It, directed by Mel Brooks, starring Leslie Nielsen. Did you ever? It was silly.
No.
So silly.
No, wait a minute.
But fun.
Wait, what was? Oh, no, never mind. I thought we were talking about, that title sounds exactly like Zorro the Gay Blade.
Oh, God, I love that movie. Guys, before we go into TV shows, I don't want to forget to mention The Lost Boys, a wonderful film movie.
I need to see that again.
I love The Lost Boys. That was on recently, and I caught it. Fright Night, one of my favorites. Roddy McDowell. It's Chris Sarandon, Susan's ex. That's where she got her name. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, he was on The Sixth Man. He was the Bionic Woman's boyfriend. In The Bionic Woman. FYI.
Oh my God, yeah. You just blew my head off. I forgot all.
That's how I
had
know
a
him.
Mad crush on Chris Sarandon.
Yeah.
The Hunger you just talked about. And I guess that's it. I did
30
I just
Days
did,
of Night really was a great movie also, by the way.
30 that's Days
a, that's
of Night.
A, that was a really great one. The idea that they have 30 days because they're in Alaska
right.
and they're in the north.
The polar,
and so there's no sun.
The polar
these,
night.
So all
right.
these vampires
right.
come out to feed 24/7
wow.
for 30 days.
Is that more of a horror, would
yeah,
you say?
It
wow.
is.
Wow, interesting.
Great. It's a great one.
I'll check it out. Okay, so I think we should start. We've already mentioned it, but I think Fabe can wax on a bit more about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, or do you think we've...
It was great. Well, what it's really showing here and what was really great is that it explores the themes of empowerment, friendship, adolescence, while reimagining vampire mythology.
Yeah.
And all of the monsters, all of the things that happened were the monsters that you have when you're an adolescent. First day of school and being afraid.
Yes.
So they would have some monster that sort of is going to represent that.
Yes.
What Lost. Did you ever see the episode when her mother died?
Gosh, it's been so long, Faye.
There was not a word spoken. The entire episode was
what?
Silent. It was all about grief.
God. Oh,
it dealt
Jesus.
With grief in such a deep, deep,
yeah.
amazing way.
That's incredible.
That's
and her,
what's
and,
great about
and the
show.
And the mentor guy, the older guy that was in
yeah,
the Taster's Choice commercials,
yeah.
remember?
He was? No. Giles.
Oh,
I just know him as Giles. And he's in, you know, with the soccer in... with.
Pele? I don't
no,
know.
No, soccer in England with the... Whatever the fuck his name is. No more gin.
Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso. He's the husband who buys all the team, who owned the team
yes.
previously. That's Giles.
Yes. Excuse me, everybody. Sorry for coughing. This
yeah.
freaking cold is still
But
with
anyway,
me.
I highly, highly recommend. Buffy the Vampire Slayer is a classic.
I need to watch it. I want to actually watch specifically.
If you have
when
teenage
I, when
kids, that's what they should be watching.
Programs that can nail grief. I've told you about that. Wanderlust with Toni Collette. And there's that one episode in it where it's dealing with her grief.
Yeah.
When filmmakers or writers can actually get it, what you can't say out loud. And, you know, all of us have experienced grief and know that sometimes there are no words. Vampire Diaries.
No, thank you.
No. Penny Dreadful, never caught I never
Penny
caught
Dreadful.
It.
Penny Dreadful, phenomenal.
Isn't that the beautiful?
She's gorgeous. Ava Green.
Ava Green.
She's
I
from
like
another...
Her.
She's from another
she
world.
She is.
She is otherworldly. She is so good in this. I highly recommend that one.
All right,
that
I'm going to check that one out.
You know, I think your husband will love it too. It's
yeah.
a beautiful show.
Okay.
The
He's
episodes,
not an Eva Green fan, I hate to tell you.
He will be.
Okay.
Patti LuPone in the second season or the end of the first season has a little
Don't
cameo.
Don't cry for me,
No,
Argentina.
She will blow you away. And she's a witch. It's a whole witch
what?
Episode. It is gorgeous.
Oh, I'm in.
It's so good.
Guys, I want to just correct something. What We Do in the Shadows, the sitcom, is not based in Brooklyn. I always think it is. It's actually Staten Island. And some of the best people I know are from Staten Island.
For many of us, it's the same thing. I would not know the difference.
It's different.
I wouldn't know the difference.
Different places. All right. I do want to mention, guys, there is a show on Netflix called Dracula, and it stars Klaus Bang. He's the bad guy in Bad Sisters. Remember, he's the dick husband in Bad Sisters, if anyone has seen that. Klaus Bang. I think I did actually look up how to pronounce it. And Dolly Wells is another is the actress with him. It is a whole different spin and take on Dracula, and I just cannot recommend it enough. It's the 2013 version, and again, it's C-L-A-E-S, Bang, Klaus Bang, and he, like I said, is the bad guy from Bad Sisters. Van Helsing, I started Van Helsing, this show that was on Sci-Fi and is now on Hulu. And it's about basically her, I guess she's Van Helsing, but it's more zombie-ish. It's vampires, but it's kind of zombie-like. It's kind of apocalyptic. And
wow, but I like that it's a female.
She's female, and these vampires will bite her, and then they cough up her blood, and then they become human again.
So she's quite the antithesis.
Right. It's quite a spin. Like, she can actually reverse it.
Interesting.
So it's actually premise. Pretty good. It's good. I give it a B. Not, you know, if it's a rainy Sunday and you're into vampires and Van Helsing, check it out. I did not see the Dracula series, the Canadian produced one. But anyway, guys.
I heard it's really slow.
I know, it's really slow. We've spent 54 minutes talking about vampires, and we hope it was fun. I think we gave a lot of, maybe I shouldn't have provided so much data for us to cover.
That's lessons a lot. Learned. We know it all.
Now we know what to include and then what to let me and Fabian run afoul instead of sticking to the script, so to speak. It's time for the advice segment, guys. And in this portion of the show, we use the British term agony auntie and uncle. Please write into the show and let Fabe and I give you our pockets of wisdom. You can submit your questions to pocketspod@gmail.com. That's pocketspod@gmail.com. Dear agony auntie and uncle, my wife and I are having friends over for dinner in a few days, and one of our guests asked if she could bring along a plus one. We have plenty of room, so I said yes. But while I was doing the seating plan, I realized I didn't know the name of the plus one.
What the fuck kind of dinner is this? Seating plan? Jesus
fancy.
Christ.
Fancy.
Yeah, fancy people. All right.
So I asked my friend to text me her information. When she responded, I was shocked. The woman in question has a unique name, and I realized that she's the very same person who has been having an ongoing affair with the fiancé of one of our other guests. The fiancé will not be joining us because he has plans with his children from a previous marriage. That goes to show you. But his partner will be there. That was kind of judgy and snarky, sorry. His partner will be there, and she has no clue that he's been having this affair behind her back. However, I know that the woman having the affair will probably recognize her, the woman her boyfriend is engaged to. I don't think anyone else has realized that they are both going to come at the same time or be in the same room together. And I'm at a loss for how to handle it. If I disinvite someone, I'm worried it will look rude or even worse, raise suspicions. But if they both turn up, that could result in an even more horrifying situation. Please help. And that's from Baffled in Chicago.
Well, I think it's a very easy thing to do. I mean, definitely put the names on the table. And for her name, you just put whore really big in red. For where this
in
plus
red.
One in red.
Wow, scarlet lettering
yes.
And everything.
No, not at all. But you know what I find unusual, what I find weird about this is she is aware of this. She's aware that this
Which
woman
means many are.
She's aware that this woman, a friend of hers whose fiance is having an affair, how close is she to her friend that wouldn't you just say, listen, I think you need to know this. Beyonce's having an affair.
But what if her friend didn't know? Because I mean, that's a tough thing to deliver. If that was my circumstance, I would 100% take my friend for a ride and tell her what was fucking going on if I heard that her husband was having an affair.
Yeah,
that is a hard thing. But that's your duty
as
a friend.
Especially if everybody else knows, and you're like,
that's the worst
part
of
this.
I would be
so mad. I'd be mad at my friends.
She basically said
me.
Everyone else is going to know. I mean, that's horrifying.
The
humiliation of that.
That no one is saying anything. Like,
she could seat them at both ends of the table, but no, I think in empirically
she has
she to, needs
uninvite
to uninvite
one of the two.
She needs to uninvite the one having the affair.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think it's tricky and also sad. Like, just sad.
This is just somebody asking a question. No, you know the answer because it's easy to say, you know what? I don't have the space for the extra person. Do you mind?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Whatever it is, whatever reason you say. But honestly, you need to tell your friend the truth. That's what you need to do.
You need to, and probably before this party.
It's so
your
sad.
Your friend should know. And it's tragic. You know what I watched today while I was cleaning up? I love to.
In a few days, she doesn't even have time.
No. When I'm doing my shit around the house and I put on Pluto or whatever and I see these old movies, Falling in Love with Meryl Streep and Robert De Niro. Did you ever see it?
No, that's not the one with...
It's just Harvey Keitel is in it.
On the subway, yeah, I remember.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's the same train line that Peter and I had our romance because we would go into Grand Central. It's the Hudson line. It's called the Metro Hudson line.
It's the same as Staten Island, right? And the Bronx.
It's a little different. We go through
it's all the same.
We
it's
go
all
through the
same.
Bronx yeah. and we end up in Grand Central. And we both have strong memories of our early romance there. But anyway, that was two people who were married and who desperately loved each other, did not consummate the affair because of their loyalty to their significant others. Wound up divorcing, and thank God at the end, there's a whole moment at Grand Central. Because the trains in Grand Central are actually the third character in the movie. It's really good.
Yeah.
So, Falling in Love, worth the revisit.
I saw it at the movies when it came out, but it's been so long that it would be a brand new movie for me. That's
great. It holds up. It holds up. Anyway, Baffled in Chicago, bad news, babe. You got to get in the car, take your girlfriend for a drive, and tell her what's up.
Yeah.
And you got to disinvite the other girl.
That she's not telling, knowing that they're going to get married. Are you going to the wedding? You're going to go to the wedding.
I know.
Knowing this and not say anything?
Terrible.
No, I couldn't.
Terrible.
I couldn't. Or I just have to stop being their friend if I don't have the nerve to tell them.
Right.
I have to.
I don't think. Yeah. But do your friend a service. She can find happiness elsewhere. Even if it's just with herself, whatever. But I don't think going into a marriage with a man like that is anything worthwhile.
No.
All right, you're up.
Dear Agony, Auntie, and Uncle, I've spent most of my life being the chubby friend, and I say that with no resentment whatsoever. In fact, it's something that I relished in for many years. I formed a pretty great sense of humor and happily became the funny one out of all my friends. Making people laugh with me and not at me made me happy. I may not have been the pretty one or the skinny one, but that never bothered me, and I formed an incredible group of close friends through high school and college, none of whom ever made me feel like I was the big one among them. About a year ago, I was diagnosed with some health issues and had to have a number of surgical procedures while also making some major lifestyle changes, dieting, giving up alcohol for a while. I like the for a while. Stuff like that. As a result, without trying, I started dropping weight. Remarkably, my role in my friendship group changed. Suddenly, people were complimenting me on how great I looked, how much weight I'd lost, and the whole thing made me so uncomfortable. One friend in our group, the person who I have said was my closest friend, seemed to take a serious dislike to my weight loss. Hmm. Of course, the dynamics in a friendship is going to change.
I know. Yeah.
All of a sudden, she started poking fun at me at every available opportunity. Whenever anyone complimented my weight loss, she'd make a snide comment like, "Oh, if only we could all get surgery and lose weight," as though I'd had liposuction instead of a major surgical procedure. She stopped answering my text, won't ever hang out with me one-on-one, and I'm getting tired of it. You just answered any question you're asking, by the way.
Yeah, really?
I'm sad that our friendship might truly end because of this, but I don't know how I can forgive her for being so mean when all I've ever done is support her. Do I just cut her out for good, or should I try and explain my side? I would absolutely explain your side. I would just say, listen, why did you become such a bitch? All of a sudden, I'm not the... Are you now the chubby one? Are you now going...
Right.
Did we just switch roles and that's why you can't handle it?
What's happening?
The dynamics in the friendship changed.
You're hurting my feelings.
If you always have the one friend... We all have friends, right?
Right.
You have the one friend. It's the funny friend, and this is the smart friend, and this is the ambitious friend.
Right.
And you know, it's that Jen Aniston movie with Friends with Money.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah,
it's that.
I do.
So when the circumstances change and something
movie.
Like that, then the dynamics are going to change.
Right.
So,
but should it, Fabian? I know, yes.
It shouldn't,
but it
can. Yeah.
Exactly. Like you would think that she would be, I mean, unless she's extremely threatened by...
She seems to attack when the other one is being complimented.
Yeah.
Where before she wouldn't get any compliments.
But here's the thing. If that's the case, what were you thinking about? How did you hold her? What esteem did you hold her in?
Right.
If now you're going to drag her down because she's getting complimented.
Right. That's it. It's what she's not getting. She sounds like a Taurus to me. I'm just saying.
You're hilarious.
That's what it sounds like to me.
She sounds like a Taurus.
It does. I'm just saying.
That is so funny you say that. Well, yeah, I say, you know, I've had to end friendships, and I didn't want to, but it was a friendship that was not healthy for me and very, very much demeaning of me. And then one day I just decided, why am I doing this? Like, it's just not worth the time.
I had something similar also, and it was once I had met Dave, once I was really happy, we'd been living together, a year goes by, one of my very closest friends was always doing the same thing of saying just mean things, little things, yeah, to stab at, like, right, how boring my life had become.
Oh, and man. But you're all in, they would do is happiness.
They would show off and say, oh God, I just met the hottest guy and I just had the best sex. And everything, yeah, was about all of the, right, dating and all the stuff that, right, they're doing and how boring I had become. And I had to stop being friends for a long, long time. It took 15 years before we talked again. Because he was just mean and he was just, but yeah, I think that kind of works the same way.
It works the same way. Like for my friends, she just demeaned me at every, yeah, turn, would make me feel so much less than.
Yeah.
And one time she even told me, oh yeah, my dad asked, so how's your scrappy friend Jen? And I thought, oh my God, like, is that how people are perceiving me? Like, that was mean.
Which, you know, means that's how she described him, right, you to him.
Right.
That's how she'd always, right, been describing.
Which, like this friend, that's how they feel underneath their, you know.
Yeah.
My gut, and maybe it's not great advice, maybe we're not the best to be advice people, but I say bail.
Oh, for bail. Sure. Like, for sure. Because this makes you question the entire friendship from the get-go.
Absolutely.
Whatever the root was not,
yeah,
equal, and it was not in her benefit. It was not because she loved you and was your, right, true friend.
Right.
It's because what she was getting out of herself, the way she felt about herself,
right,
the bad friend,
right,
the way having her as a friend made her feel. And, right, now that she's not the same,
yeah,
she doesn't feel that. She doesn't need her in her life anymore.
Yeah.
She's going to go find someone else who's chubby or someone else who's less, yeah, attractive, so, and someone else that can be the butt,
precisely,
of a joke.
Precisely.
That's what she needs because her self-esteem is zero. But that's what I think.
You will be better off. And even if you have to stay in the same group of friends, it's easy to just stay away from certain ones if there's,
sure,
a big group of girls.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, just a reminder, follow us on Instagram @pockets_podcast. Please like our page. And please rate and review the show on whatever format you listen on. And one more reminder, please, Fabian and I are desperate to give our pockets of wisdom and any advice that you might need.
We won't be mean, not like this. And it will be anonymous.
Thanks for joining us tonight. Again, our learning curve. Maybe there was a little too much information and less banter, but thank you.
We never found out about the fangs.
And we never discussed the fangs.
The fangs, like how did that originate? I'm going to be wondering about that. You're going to be wondering about that.
All right, guys, we'll see you next time. Thanks for joining.
Bye, everybody.